9:06 at the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. It is now time for the Lawrence Business Magazine Show on 1320 KLWN, and here's your host, Anne Frame Herzog.
Thank you, John, and welcome to the Lawrence Business Magazine, where we have in-depth conversations to follow up on articles and explore the people and businesses making a positive impact on Lawrence. Today, I'm pleased to have Gene Meyer, President and CEO of Lawrence Memorial Hospital. Thanks for being here today, Gene.
Well, good morning, Ann. It's good to be here.
It's nice to have you here. Well, first, most of our listeners know you. I want to talk a little bit about just your history and how you came to be in this healthcare profession and Lawrence Memorial Hospital specifically. How did you get here? Because you've been here a while.
Been here 15 years. Yeah. I think I entered healthcare in probably a little bit of a non-traditional approach. When I got out of college, I was my undergraduate degrees in basically human resources.
Okay.
And so I was a personnel director for Kraft Foods at the world's largest marshmallow factory. And I hired
awesome.
All the people that made mini marshmallows and Jet Puff marshmallows, and I was pretty proud of it. It was a great opportunity to get into HR with obviously an excellent
sure.
company. In a roundabout way, though, my parents were elderly, and I really needed to return to the Kansas City area where they were located. I'm the only child, and so took a position in a hospital, a smaller
okay.
hospital, as a personnel director. Mm-hmm. And found I really enjoyed it. I found that what we do in healthcare is very important.
Mm-hmm.
It has a very important social benefit, a very important community benefit, obviously a very important benefit when it comes to providing care for people's health. And so literally worked my way up the ranks, became an assistant administrator, went back and got my master's
mm-hmm.
degree, and then became a hospital CEO at age 35. And was really I was amazed at everything I didn't know, but bluffed my way through, and I'm still bluffing my way through. So, but been in Lawrence 15 years.
Yeah, well, but I guess probably coming up through the ranks is a great way to learn the hospital because you see things at the see so much as you're growing. Starting at the bottom of any organization, I think is always a great way to learn instead of
I think you're right, Ann. I think that and also maybe just additional. In human resources, I mean, obviously, I think human resources, you get the opportunity to interact with a whole bunch of different
people.
That's
true, yeah.
And so, you know, in healthcare, mm-hmm. We are a people business,
mm-hmm.
and it's people helping people. And I think the opportunity to work in an HR capacity and not only hire and work closely with people that provide the care, but really learning what they do was really a good opportunity. And so the time I spent doing that was a real good primer for later administrative roles.
Well, then just speaking of healthcare, the hospital is the second largest employer it's one of our biggest employers.
Yeah, I think we're probably number three.
Yeah. And how many people do you guys employ there?
We have about 1,300 people.
Wow.
And scattered throughout mm-hmm. now several locations with the largest number of folks working on obviously the main campus on Main Street, but in lots of different communities, lots of different locations here in Lawrence.
Yeah, we're going to talk about those things.
Sure,
satellites.
Sure.
I want to talk about those. I think those are fascinating. But when you're the hospital, it's changed over the years. I'm sure obviously I want to talk a little bit about healthcare reform or a lot about healthcare reform. As it's coming closer.
I don't want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about it? You're tired of talking about it?
No.
No, just because I think in the article you talked about it, and your perspective is obviously very informed, more than probably anybody else is around here. You've been studying this for a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
But just as a hospital, as a community hospital, how does that differ from some of these big conglomerates? And also how you've taken our hospital from a little hospital to a much bigger hospital. And how does that – and why is that so good for this community?
Well, first of all, it has local control, mm-hmm. local ownership, local governance. The Board of Trustees, with whom I work very closely, are appointed by the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
They represent the community.
Oh, they're appointed by the mayor.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that. Okay.
They represent the community.
Mm-hmm.
They serve voluntarily. But they really represent and hopefully govern from a strategic planning standpoint the direction that our community hospital is
mm-hmm.
going. That's lost when hospitals join systems and become parts of larger, if you will, corporations. And so that local relationship is, in my mind, is the way healthcare should be delivered, and is really, I think, just the best way of going about things. My direct phone number, Ann, is 505-6130, and I answer my phone.
That's awesome.
And, it's probably 2-3 times a week people call and say, I can't believe you answer your own phone. and my response to that is, we're a community hospital, and we have the accountability that's necessary. We should have the accountability that's necessary to be responsive and to be approachable by those that we serve. So it's kind of a cool way to do it. But, yeah, community hospitals, I think, are very important. I think community hospitals are threatened with some of the things going on in healthcare. The requirements that we have to meet are the same requirements that large, complex health systems have to meet. And they have the ability, if you will, because of their size, to spread out their costs through a number of various organizations. We don't. Our requirements from an information technology standpoint, from a regulatory standpoint, from a physician relationship standpoint, are all dependent on how well we do ourselves and not how, 15 different
locations
do.
You can't rely on somebody else to do better.
Exactly.
And balance it
which is okay. I mean, that puts more pressure on us, but at the same time, I think that's it's really becoming more and more challenging every day.
Now, well, and in financing the hospital, where do all the finances come from budget-wise? I mean, obviously, you deal with insurance companies, payments. I mean, where does all the funding for the hospital come from?
Well, the operational funding does come from the revenue sources that we generate. Obviously, the delivery of healthcare on an inpatient and outpatient basis are the large components of our revenue stream. When we do major financing or capital financing, we do that with bonds that are issued, and we've been able to be ranked as a A1 level hospital from a rating standpoint by Moody's Credit Agency in New York, which means that we're able to borrow money when the need arises.
So that allows you to borrow money easier or at a better rate, or just
both easier. We have access to capital. And the rate we pay is a better rate because of our ability to pay it back. And thirdly, I think we like many healthcare organizations, rely upon philanthropy. And Lawrence is an extremely generous community, and we've been very blessed to have a lot of folks make a commitment to support LMH through their philanthropic dollars.
That's great. Now, when you do fill, I know, because I know you had your Hearts of Gold ball. That was just, that was this last May. That's every other year, right?
It is.
So
we have
a lot
to dress
work,
up
right?
every couple of years, yeah.
But do you have other fundraising events?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, we have annual events. In addition to the Hearts of Gold ball, I think the biggest event that we have is our fundraising golf tournament, and that's a week from tomorrow, after Labor Day, Penny Jones Golf Tournament. And we scatter about 360 golfers over the morning and afternoon at both courses at Alvamar. Sometimes they come back in. Sometimes people are just lost out there. But the good thing is they contribute money to play, and it's a great tournament. And that generally nets in about $130,000,
which is a
great contribution to support healthcare locally.
Now, are those funds targeted towards a certain purpose, or is that something that you guys use to discretionary how you feel it's best for the hospital?
Generally, they're not set for a particular purpose. And then through the leadership of the Endowment Association and the Endowment Association Board, they disperse them to necessary healthcare services.
Now, if somebody wants to be involved in that golf tournament, they still have a chance, or you guys
fill
up?
I don't think we're filled up, although we always fill up, it seems like. But I think we have some slots open, and the best way to do that is just to call the main number at the hospital and ask for the Endowment Association.
Okay. Because I'm sure Hank will promise you good weather that weekend, too. So.
You know, I was waiting when I coming in here. I looked on my phone on the 10-day forecast, and it's going to be another beautiful day in Lawrence. So.
That's great. So what do you think, what is a hospital's responsibility to the community I mean, you talked about serving the community. And what is a community's responsibility to your hospital, to keeping a hospital healthy? You know?
Well, I think our responsibility to the community is responding to community needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one deficit of a community hospital, Ann, is unfortunately we can't be all things to all people.
Mm-hmm.
But our responsibility is to learn about and understand what our community needs are and how we can meet them, both from a sick care standpoint, mm-hmm. but also from a well care standpoint. I think probably the biggest changes that are coming about in healthcare in my career is more of an emphasis on wellness and prevention
mm-hmm.
than just traditionally delivering care only when people are sick or hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So our responsibility is really understanding what our community needs are and meeting those in the best way possible. Conversely, I think the community's responsibility is to hold us accountable.
Mm-hmm.
I really mean that. I think that, you know, healthcare is a challenging thing. And when people are involved, you know, it's not widgets. It's
right.
it's a very dedicated group of folks that we have working, but at the same time, people are people and challenges
mm-hmm.
take place. And I think the community has a responsibility to hold us accountable for quality care, financial accountability, which we're proud of in both cases,
mm-hmm.
quality of care and financial accountability, and really being responsive to the community.
That's great. Because now, when you're talking about the well care, what kind of programs? Because that has, I mean, that seems like, you know, we keep talking about personal responsibility. Everybody talks about that, but how do you actually, how do you make people have personal responsibility? That's what I always find confusing or hard to do because the people that have personal responsibility have it, and then those that don't. How do you educate people? How do you bring them aboard?
I don't know. And, if we could solve that, we could solve a lot of things. I think the best way of putting it is we can do the best job we can of educating
mm-hmm.
them. And a lot of our educational activities really are involved when people are not well
mm-hmm.
and what got them to that state and how we can prevent them from going back
right.
to that state in the future. And then there's obviously a good segment of our population that understands that prevention and wellness,
mm-hmm.
You know, is in the long run really what should take place. And,
yeah.
But again, we do a ton of educational programs, a lot of media,
mm-hmm.
print ads, and frankly, from a social media standpoint, our website and connections to other sources of information about wellness care is vitally important. Lastly, Ann, I think it's always been our goal to work closely with other healthcare-related organizations
mm-hmm.
in Lawrence, and you know where there's so many really good organizations in Lawrence that are also dedicated to providing some form of healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to do is to really coordinate with them how we deliver care and allow all of us to move forward in the most efficient way.
Yeah, that is one thing. So I noticed whenever there's some sort of healthcare event, or you know, with healthcare access, with this all these different things, you guys are always very prominent and always involved, and kind of feel like you're reaching out. You're kind of you always see LMH. You guys are everywhere, which is pretty
well. We could be thought of as the 500-pound gorilla, but we really don't want to be in that. I mean, we're a partner, and I
yeah.
think that partnership is important. And whatever support that, I mean, we can't work in a vacuum,
mm-hmm.
and working closely with them, with other organizations, vitally important. And I think it's going to become even more important as healthcare reform approaches.
And I want to get back. I'm going to talk about that here in a little bit. When the business of the hospital, you have changed the way that the hospital has done business too, and we also want to talk about that, being that you've been expanding, you've been getting these incredible rankings with the cardiologist group,
mm-hmm.
and those when you get those rankings, how does that affect the hospital, affect the hospital? Does it help you? I mean, just other than just saying, just patting you on the back, how does that actually help the hospital?
Well, I think it helps in a couple of ways. I think hopefully it builds a level of confidence
mm-hmm.
Within the region that we serve, that people have, you know, even greater confidence that after evaluation that we're doing a really good job of what we do. I mean, I think that first and foremost is kind of the principle of trying to achieve some of these rankings. Okay. Secondly, there are some economic benefits to it, too. And, you know, we mentioned the ultimate capital financing and the benefits of that. But there's also this term that's been adopted in healthcare now called pay for performance. Recently in the journal World, it was announced that hospitals will be in a position and through healthcare reform that if patients are readmitted back into the hospital within a 30-day period, if that happens excessively, there is some takeaway in terms of financial reimbursement from Medicare. LMH in the last reporting period did not have any takeaways. Now, we had some readmissions, and we're always going to readmit people when they need to, but we didn't go over that threshold that would require any decrease in Medicare reimbursement. And so, again, from a financial standpoint, tying quality and financial accountability together is the methodology.
That's great. Well, and we'll be back to talk some more with Gene Meyer here in a minute.
This is the Lawrence Business Magazine show on the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. Let's return to the Lawrence Business Magazine show. Once again, here's Ann Frame Herzog.
Thank you. I'm here with Gene Meyer, President and CEO of Lawrence Memorial Hospital. And we've been talking about all the different things that a hospital does, and they kind of keep coming around to healthcare and healthcare reform. That's the big issue hanging over everybody's head as things start to come into effect. And how... can you tell me what's happened so far that's actually taken place with healthcare reform, and how are things coming down the pike? And let's just start talking about it because there's so much going on.
Well, there is, and I'm sure I'll forget a few things. I think since the Affordable Care Act was enacted, from if you will, an employer standpoint, they've put some changes in place on health plans that. Have required people coverage to extend to kids up to age 26. A lot of preventative care has been instituted or mandated to be instituted into health plans. A lot of pre-existing conditions that currently prevented people from getting health care have been eliminated, and others. And that's from an employer-based standpoint. From a provider standpoint, as we mentioned before the break, there have been systems put in place that do require hospitals to meet certain quality standards or be penalized financially. And so those have been instituted, and we're just now seeing kind of the impact of that.
I would think if you're a good hospital, like you said, you haven't been penalized. I mean, I think some of those things would be very good to have standards, because then you know that you aren't just carrying the burden that other hospitals have to step up.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And without getting into the complexities of how this technically works, and because I'm not sure I could even explain it, but the only downside for us on this, Anne, is we've achieved pretty high levels of quality and patient satisfaction for a number of years. And the way that the system is being set up, there are some advantage, if you will, some advantages to people that might have at one time been ranked lower, and so their level of improvement.
So if they improve, they do well. But you're already there, so it just
You know, and I mean, you know, I'm probably not going to pronounce this right or even say it right, but you know, it's kind of like the fellow, the Lake Wobegon. All of our kids are excellent students, or whatever, something like that. I mean, you know, hopefully, eventually, we get to that point, and we all achieve those levels. But you know, LMH has maintained high standards and high requirements for a long time, and so our level of improvement is going to be a little bit less than what some other hospitals are in. But that's okay. We need to maintain that.
Now, you've also talked when you were in the magazine and stuff, too, about the burden, though, that healthcare is placing on a community hospital. We talked a little bit about that, about spreading out. You don't have a big system.
Right.
So, and is it just paperwork, or what is it that, what is the actual burden?
Well, a couple things. Yes, paperwork and regulatory morass is part of it. You know, the commitment to information technology, you know, with having an electronic medical record and a computer physician order entry to maximize patient safety and quality. Those are all requirements, mm-hmm. and all those activities are very capital intensive,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. that's where we don't have the ability to spread it out.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to communicate electronically with other providers, with other hospitals, with other physicians in the community to avoid unnecessary testing and to maximize patient safety and efficiency. So that's mm-hmm. a requirement that comes about. The other requirement that I talk about all the time and is the fact that the Affordable Care Act is going to provide the ability to insure up to 32 million Americans of the 50 million or so that are currently uninsured.
Right.
32 million more Americans will be insured with either possibly Medicaid expansion or an offering of the insurance exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be able to access health insurance. When that happens, we're going to see utilization of the healthcare system obviously increase.
Mm-hmm.
These are folks that for whatever reason have not had the benefit of health insurance, and now obviously they're going to use it, and they should use it.
Mm-hmm.
How they're going to get the delivery of that care is going to be the challenge, and it's going to put a burden. It's going to put that burden on hospitals like LMH to put in place access to healthcare that might not currently exist. Many times that's in primary care physician offices, and unfortunately, even in a great community that's relatively easy to recruit to, like Lawrence, we don't have enough primary care physicians. So mm-hmm. where are those folks going to go? They're either going to have to wait to get access
right.
to that primary care, or they may end up in the emergency room to receive primary care, and that's simply not the right place.
Right. Now, when you're you're talking about all these new people that are coming into the system just for basic medical needs.
Exactly.
That we're adding in hand. And, well, how do we address then this? And this is going off on a different tangent, but with regards to primary physicians, how do we address that? Because I've heard, you know, this quite a bit, mm-hmm. you know, that we have a lot, we need more primary physicians. How do we get them, and how do we in Lawrence address that, and is there a way that it can be addressed across the board? Because people having a primary care physician is pretty important.
Well, moving the Titanic, that's the healthcare
yes.
system, into a change.
Yeah.
And frankly, I have mm-hmm. to tell you, Anna, you know, I know this is a business show. It really comes back to money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reimbursement rate that primary care physicians receive is much less than the reimbursement rate that specialists receive. And so from an incentive standpoint,
right.
people leaving medical school, choosing what specialty to go mm-hmm. in, many times are choosing a higher level of specialty. Another specialty that is economically better off. Keep in mind, most folks leave medical school with debt of $150,000 to $200,000. And,
yeah.
Certain specialties over the course of their career are going to earn $3 to $4 million more in income than primary care.
Right.
And so we've got to change the whole reimbursement.
Yeah, that's a
and that's
system.
A very,
yeah.
very slow mm-hmm. And entangled process.
And is the reason that they're reimbursed, is it just the – how does that happen that they get reimbursed so much less? How did that come about? Just not the respect? They didn't have the best lobbyists? How does that –
Well, that's interesting you say that. I think part of it is
uh-huh.
that. But I think this is a phenomenon that's occurred over
yeah.
many, many years.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, more procedure-based physicians receive higher levels than those that deliver primary and preventative mm-hmm. care. Frankly, I think it's the emphasis that the industry has not placed mm-hmm. on primary and preventative care over
mm-hmm.
time. Now, slowly, we're getting to that point, but we're still not attaching the dollars to it that we need to.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like when you get something, the specialist kind of thing, it's like it's easier to point out that this is worth something because it's something
yes.
a little different.
A little tangible, too.
And you can,
yeah.
then it's, it has,
yeah.
you can qualify it a little easier than primary. Just keeping somebody healthy is a little
yeah.
harder to
yeah.
qualify.
I mean, we took something out. We made a hole in
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
You know, whatever.
You had to
know,
stitch them up.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
It's a little
yeah.
easier to.
So.
Yeah. Now, as the there's a lot of things happening in January with regards to healthcare, right? There's some things that are coming down. Mm-hmm. And I know we were just talking at the break about Medicare or Medicaid, and you had a form. You said a lot of people have shown a lot of interest and are curious about that. What is happening with Medicare and Medicaid, and are there other things that are happening in January that people need to know to be proactive?
Yeah. On Medicaid, Ann, and again, that's generally the state insurance okay. program mm-hmm. for the disabled and for the economically disadvantaged folks.
Okay.
The Affordable Care Act is calls for the expansion of Medicaid eligibility. It's raising the eligibility from 100% to the federal poverty level, depending on family size, mm-hmm. to potentially 133% of the federal poverty level. And that 33%, because of this forum that some right. of us participated in the other night, will affect about could affect 130,000 Kansans.
Wow, that's a lot.
Now, the Supreme Court mm-hmm. recently, when they upheld the constitutionality mm-hmm. of the Affordable Care Act that last summer, did say, though, that Medicaid expansion can be opted out on a state-by-state basis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really dependent upon what our state leaders mm-hmm. determine to be the right approach, whether they will agree with Medicaid expansion mm-hmm. or not. And I there's a lot of speculation out there, but I'm not sure any of us know mm-hmm. what the governor's office is going to do.
So a Medicaid expansion, though, would just basically allows more people that are within the poverty level just to access that
exactly.
service, basically.
Because that donut hole, which is being referred to, 130,000 uh-huh. Kansans, those folks probably, I would say, would have a challenge going out into the marketplace and mm-hmm. Buying their own health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So probably they would remain uninsured if Kansas opts out of okay. this Medicaid expansion program.
Wow.
Clear as mud, isn't it?
Yeah. That's
Medicare,
a lot of moral issues there, too.
Medicare, but lots mm-hmm. of changes. Some of them involve lesser reimbursement to providers mm-hmm. in order to pay for health care reform and to insure those 32 million Americans. After the first of the year, there's a number of regulatory activities that are going to go in place mm-hmm. that we have to be ready for.
Yeah, I've noticed when we've just taken our son to the doctor and stuff like that, when how things are going are different with our insurance company mm-hmm. on whether you pay your deductible up front, all that sort of thing, or your $20 or $30 fee. But how is that now for me as just the consumer? I have work, health care, and stuff. How is that going to change really what I get or what I do that much?
Well, I think we're going to see some plans. Mm-hmm. Increase copays and deductibles.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that over time.
Just to balance it out.
Well, two things.
Mm-hmm.
One, to balance it out from an economic standpoint. And then there is this theory, Ann, that if we make people pay more out of their pocket, mm-hmm. they will do a better job of personal accountability. I can debate both sides of that.
Yeah.
But at least mm-hmm. in theory, that's mm-hmm. one of the several reasons for increasing copays and deductibles.
Okay. Now on when you talk about the healthcare delivery, you talk about needing more primary care physicians and stuff. Is there anything that the hospital is doing, or what are we doing to try to address that in our community?
Well, no, the hospital has to play that role.
Right.
Working with independent primary care practices, we're helping them recruit.
Mm-hmm.
We're channeling folks that may be approaching us to them, and as far as their curriculum vitae and that, getting people there, assisting them with moving to the area. The hospital, most hospitals that mm-hmm. are organized like LMH as a not-for-profit, we do have some regulatory parameters that we can't go beyond with independent practices, but there are some things we mm-hmm. can do and will do to encourage more people to come to Lawrence. We do employ a number of physicians,
mm-hmm.
And the employment mechanism, if you will, makes it a lot easier to get people to Lawrence because some of the boundaries that are apparent with independent practices are not there in an employed physician standpoint. And so we're employing more and more physicians. The internal medicine group, IMG, mm-hmm. out on 6th Street, became affiliated with the hospital about a year ago, and they have a new physician, Dr. Anna Kumru, who came to us after the affiliation, and gosh, it's just been a great relationship with them, and we see more and more of that happening. So, yeah, we have to play a proactive role.
Okay. Well, we'll be back and talk a little bit more with Gene Meyer here in the Lawrence Business Magazine.
This is the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN, continuing with the Lawrence Business Magazine show once again, and Frame Herzog.
Thanks. I'm here with Gene Meyer, CEO and of the Lawrence Memorial Hospital. And we've been talking a lot about health care, but let's also talk a little bit about some of these great facilities that you guys are providing, because it's pretty amazing, I think, how a small – LMH is a small hospital. But it's not tiny, but it's a small community, it's a community hospital, but it has some amazing services, your cardiology, your pulmonary. Let's just talk about some of these differences in the technologies that these utilize.
Sure. Well, facilities are important. Obviously, it keeps mm-hmm. architects employed. But
job creator,
yeah, there you go. And but more importantly than that, I think facilities – do provide the workspace and the opportunities to really let the people do what they do best, if you will, and so that's what we've tried to do, and we've planned those carefully. There's an old joke in the healthcare industry that if you come into town and you don't know where the hospital is, just look for the crane, and because the hospital is probably under construction. And we're about done with some of our major expansion mm-hmm. that we've done, and I think it's prepared us now for probably the next 10 to 15 years. Now, we're always going to do some renovation on that, mm-hmm. But I think the major facility expansions have taken place, which have facilitated mm-hmm. Important programs like our surgical program and our oncology program and our cardiology program.
Now, those are ranked programs, though, too.
These are nationally ranked yeah. programs that we're very proud of okay. and work hard to achieve. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, not easy to do when you're mm-hmm. When you're a community hospital and have a lot of opportunities to support a lot of different programs.
Right.
But the history behind cardiology and oncology has really been that these are such key areas. Again, back to my earlier mm-hmm. comment, Ann, about being responsive to the community needs. Until we had an oncology program, people would line up in front of our hospital to wait for a bus to take them to Topeka for radiation care.
Wow.
And I mean, you know,
it's hard.
And and while they still receive the care, mm-hmm. that care is best delivered locally.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, not for just that reason, but for many reasons, we thought that the oncology program was a key to really establishing LMH's reputation as more than kind of an entry level hospital, more than that, and one that we can develop high touch and high tech care. From that, the cardiology program and the interventional cardiology program, where stents are placed in people mm-hmm. to prevent future blockages in arteries, and that has been very important. We have an outstanding group. I mean, it's all physician driven.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have the good quality physicians here, and we have some outstanding ones.
Well, I'm bringing those working with your cardiologist. I just think of some of the things we've talked about and are exploring, and like wanting this to be more of a retirement community, really supporting mm-hmm. our senior citizens. Having a good cardiologist group is always good when you have a retirement.
It is for all ages, and particularly for those that have found Lawrence attractive mm-hmm. As a retirement center.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we're supportive of that effort mm-hmm. that city and county are put together to make this more of enticing.
Right. And now you have these groups too. I know you guys, we talked about, you have your surgery center, all these things. Now, you also work, though, with other hospitals, because I think, if you were just saying off the air, and you've said before that you can't provide everything because that would just deplete your money as well as the quality of care.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you decide what you're doing, and how do you work with these other hospitals that have other specialties?
Well, I think the way we determine what we do is, what's demand for the mm-hmm. services, how many of what occurs. Mm-hmm. Open heart surgery is a good example.
Okay.
We've looked over time that if in our primary service area annually, probably about 100 to 110 people receive open heart surgery. Okay. The American College mm-hmm. of Cardiology says to have a good program, a good core program, you need to do at least 200 open heart surgeries a year.
Okay.
Well, we don't even touch that.
We touch the minimum. Yeah.
And you know, realistically, even if we were to open one, we probably wouldn't get all 110 mm-hmm. open heart surgeries. So we then work closely between our physicians and others with what others in the area provide excellent services. And we're fortunate mm-hmm. that, particularly in Kansas City, that there are several excellent programs that provide, in this case, mm-hmm. Excellent open heart surgical care. And so that's how it's determined. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have a financial relationship with them or anything like that. It's what's best for the patient and where will that patient receive the best quality of care.
That's great. I mean, that's because I know that we were talking about children and stuff too, because I've noticed you can deal with children on some levels, but the emergency care for children is so specific. You've taken kids, you guys, through the emergency have taken to St. Luke's. Is that where they go?
Children's Mercy.
Children's Mercy.
Yeah. We're really fortunate to have an organization like Children's Mercy mm-hmm. Hospital in Kansas City that does an outstanding job of delivery of care. Now, we take care of a lot of kids here.
Yeah.
I mean, we do that both in the mm-hmm. emergency room and our pediatric group and our smaller pediatric unit and obviously newborns. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But then there are some cases just as specialty cases with mm-hmm. adults that are best served at a children's hospital. Mm-hmm. And so our relationship with Children's Mercy, if you ask me to look ahead, I mean, I would hope that our relationship grows even stronger with mm-hmm. Children's Mercy and maybe someday Children's Mercy could have more of a presence in Lawrence. Not to be in competition with our pediatricians, but really to support what they're doing. But, you know, that's a ways off.
No, I think that's fascinating because really if you have specialties that you do, then you work with other hospitals. It does seem like when you don't want to deplete the brain power, you have those people where they need to be that they can serve the most.
Well, sure. And, I mean, with limited dollars that Affordable Care Act and healthcare reform mm-hmm. will produce for the future, we have to be more creative and more cooperative in how we deliver healthcare.
I also like the fact that when you talk about, you know, child, when you can't provide those services, I know that you get them to Children's Mercy. You take care of who you can, and that your doctors and everybody's well aware of that, what you can and cannot do. And I think that's when you're, as a mother of a 9-year-old child,
sure.
when you take them in, you want to make sure that if somebody can't take care of them, they're making sure somebody that will be able to do the job is there. And that's pretty important.
Here's a great example. I mentioned open heart mm-hmm. surgery. You know, we had a patient come in, and this is only one example of many, that we could not treat from mm-hmm. interventional cardiology, and this person did need cardiac surgery. This triage system was set up in such a good way, and the transfer system was set up in a good way, that we had somebody on a surgical table in Kansas City, at a Kansas City hospital, probably in less time than that hospital, where the receiving hospital, would have had that patient go from their emergency room to their operating
wow.
room.
That's awesome.
And that's kind of cool.
That's wonderful.
I mean, that's
pretty proud
only,
of that.
Not only cool, but it's good for the patient,
yeah.
too. And
you have just one area here. You guys have a lot of clinics around town. You guys do a lot of clinics.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have offices in Eudora and Tonganoxie and Baldwin.
Baldwin City and McLeod.
And McLeod.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that work with you guys? Because I know those are actually Lawrence LMH affiliated.
They are.
The
physicians and the staff in those four locations mm-hmm. Are employees of LMH.
Mm-hmm.
We have made an investment in those communities because not only to reach out to their community, but also from a business standpoint, mm-hmm. Ann, those are key communities that kind of are on our perimeter,
mm-hmm.
and we want to draw that line between Lawrence and Kansas City and say
these are ours.
We want those patients to come here, and let's face it, healthcare. You know, as the mm-hmm. article had talked about, healthcare is a business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and although we're confused with a lot of different things, at the end of the day, we're a business, and we need those revenue sources to survive.
But as a business that you were talking about earlier, this is what I wanted to ask you. LMNH is a not-for-profit business. Now, there are hospitals that are for-profit?
Yes. They're the bad guys.
They're the big guys. No, I would think so. No. I don't have a problem with people making money. Just want to make sure they're doing it, you know, fairly. And I think having a healthy business and a healthy hospital is great for our community. But why are these big organizations, or are these the ones that are for profit, or the ones that are bigger?
Yeah, they're Wall Street organizations.
Yeah.
Their probably level of charitable care is, I believe, historically been less than what a not-for-profits are, community mm-hmm. hospital is. They exist to benefit their shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
We exist to benefit the community. And I think, simply put, that's the difference.
Yeah.
And really, there are no good guys, no bad guys.
We all share
the same mission. But in addition to my belief that community hospitals are important, I think community hospitals that are not-for-profit are also very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also, just as I think it changes your philosophy on how you do business when you're a not-for-profit, when you're a community hospital, if you're answering to shareholders, there's a difference between answering to your board, who is appointed community mm-hmm. people, and answering to shareholders who want you to just see a profit at all.
Well, you're right. And, I mean, any hospital, mm-hmm. there are a number of services that simply don't make money.
Mm-hmm.
If you're faced with meeting stockholder goals,
mm-hmm.
You might look a second time at those services mm-hmm. and determine whether they should continue or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, we want to be prudent about things, even in our setting, but I think there's more of a drive in a for-profit setting to eliminate services that might be more beneficial, but yet either lose money or, mm-hmm. or don't break even.
But is it when people get into the health care business, that must be very hard on – I think it would be very difficult to make some of those choices.
It's very difficult.
Because my people that are nurses and doctors, most people become nurses and doctors because they want to help people, and it's hard when you're not able to do that.
Well, if you're driven by a profit motive, it puts another dimension on it.
Yeah. And we won't even start talking about the pharmaceutical companies.
I have my own theories, Anne.
But you do. Well, this has been really fascinating. I think that the work that you guys do at the hospital is great. What do you see? Are there any other areas that you really want to grow in over the next 5-10 years?
Well, yeah. I mean, I mentioned children's,
mm-hmm.
Children's Mercy, if you will,
right.
and pediatric care. I mean, I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, preparing for the baby boomer population and more geriatric care is, mm-hmm. is going to be important. I've said many times that LMH must work closely with other community healthcare organizations to better coordinate care.
Mm-hmm.
We really need to do that. And the good news is we have great relationships. We just need to probably take those to the next level to even coordinate care better. See, there's this little thing called bundling that eventually will take place by Medicare, and Medicare will pay to someone a bundled payment for an episode of care. So if somebody comes into a doctor's office, that goes to a hospital, that goes to a nursing home, that goes to a home health agency, and goes back, that episode of care is going to be bundled into one payment.
Wow.
Now, I don't know who they're going to give that money to. Chances are they may give it to the hospital. So we need to make sure that we're doing the most efficient delivery of mm-hmm. care possible. And that's going to be challenging. And particularly it's going to be challenging if there are disparate organizations along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So
your communication lines have to be pretty clear.
Communication lines, efficiency, all those issues are vitally important.
Well, I want to – more to think about. We'll have to have you back.
Okay.
Well, Gina, thank you so much for being here. This has been incredible. I think my head's buzzing here. I have so much information, and it's really we are so lucky to have you guys here in our community. The hospital's been such a great resource for this community and helps our whole community grow. You can find us we're here every Thursday morning on the Lawrence Business Magazine. You can find our magazines at Hy-Vee, the Merck, the Chamber of Commerce downtown, and you can also watch us. You can View us on lawrencebusinessmagazine.com and like us on Facebook, where you can get updates and information about the upcoming shows and also the next business magazine. So every morning, every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. here on KLWN, redefining the concept of business.